It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike runs a coast-to-coast quiz party with four bulging brains as the floor show. You provide the questions and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is muffed, you get the Junior Britannica plus a $50 war bond plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information, Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous and completely go as you please, Information, Please tonight offers those practically Siamese twins, Franklin P. Adams and John Kieran, and the music critic and radio commentator, Dean Taylor. And as our fourth guest, we give you the distinguished NBC London commentator, author of the bestseller From the Land of Silent People, Mr. Robert St. John, who's just back from London on leave. Now, Mr. St. John had one date and one date only to give us, and we took advantage of it. This was made possible by the following telegram that we received from Gregory Rathoff, who was originally announced for tonight. This telegram was addressed to the producer of Information, Please, Mr. Dan Golenthal, and it reads as follows. My heart is broken into 1,000 pieces that I cannot keep my date on your sensational program tonight. I am not finished with my new picture. My new picture is Something to Shout About. That is its name. But I will positively be with you next week, rain or shine. Please believe me, I couldn't avoid it. Every word is the truth. Best regards, Gregory Rathoff. Now, although we regret that Mr. Rathoff, we regret that he can't be with us tonight, but we are also glad that his appearance won't be long postponed, and we are very happy to have the privilege offered us of having Mr. St. John on in his stead this evening. We're going to begin with a question from Julia Mullen of New York City. How did each of these people, of fact or fiction, rise to a particular emergency? And the first person is Bessie. Of course, you have to know who Bessie is, Mr. Hewitt.
Well, it was Bessie who was the heroine in Curse Who Shall Not Ring Tonight.
That's right.
But she rose by clinging to the clapper of the bell.
That's quite right. And what did she do by so clinging?
Saved Basil Underwood, who was doomed to die at dawn.
That's right. Very good. I wonder how many of us remembered all those details. Mr. Adams, did you?
I remember that, and I also remember that it was written by Rose Hartwick Thorpe.
You do. And what else do you remember, Mr. Hewitt?
That's enough.
That's enough. All right. How did General Simovich rise to an emergency in St. John?
By staging a coup d'etat or putsch in Yugoslavia on the last week of March of last year, leading indirectly to the war in the Balkans.
Yes. He gave the spark to the resistance, which is still continuing, wouldn't you say?
Right.
And what is Simovich doing now?
He was Prime Minister of the refugee government in London. He has since been replaced by Yovanovitch, and Simovich is now in sort of retirement somewhere in England.
Mm-hmm. At the time that Simovich started this coup d'etat in Yugoslavia, was the present General Mihalovich very much in evidence?
Well, he was almost an unknown. He was an insignificant man in the army.
But apparently he's quite a guy.
He had the stuff, and it still has got it.
You bet. All right. How about Johnny Stout? How did Johnny Stout rise to the emergency? You ever hear of Johnny Stout, Mr. Adams?
Never.
Never heard of him? Your acquaintance is limited. Mr. Taylor, have you ever heard of him?
We'll pull him out, little Johnny Stout.
Why, sir?
All right, pussy's in the well, isn't that it?
Yeah.
Something's in the well.
Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams still hasn't heard it. He doesn't have any idea what this is all about.
That isn't the way I heard it.
I don't suppose you even know little Johnny Green, Mr. Adams.
He put him in.
Oh, you do? All right, now don't be a snob next time.
Grover Cleveland Alexander rose to what emergency and how? Mr. Kieran.
In the seventh inning of the final game of the 1926 World Series played on a rainy Sunday at the Yankee Stadium, he struck out Tony Lazzeri on a low outside ball and thus saved the series for the Cardinals.
Very good. Your head is full of that sort of thing, Mr. Kieran.
Can't get it out.
Can't get it out.
Did Kieran answer that question or write it?
He sounds as if you were reading, didn't he, Mr. Taylor?
Yeah.
A wonderful man.
He's not, though.
I still admire him after all these years.
How about stuff like that?
Oh, that's terrific. How about this one, gentlemen, from Barbara Redfield of West Los Angeles, California. What nation raised an open city, that's R-A-Z-E-D, raised an open city by air after it had surrendered? Mr. Taylor.
Germany.
Raised what city?
Rotterdam.
Rotterdam is right. And what was the date, remember?
The date?
The date. The month and year.
Why don't you speak to Mr. Kieran?
Well, this isn't far back enough for him.
Oh, well, it was 1939.
No, it was 40, I think.
40.
May 1940, yes. After Rotterdam had surrendered, Germany gave evidence of
the war began in 1939.
That's right.
I remember that distinctly.
Yes. Mr. St. John, do we know anything at all about the present condition of Rotterdam since the half destruction of it?
Very little information gets to London from that particular part of Europe.
Yeah.
A great deal gets there from other parts like the Balkans.
Yeah.
In fact, we can tell you in London within about 24 hours what the price of beef cattle is in Zagreb, Croatia.
That's a useful thing to know.
Oh, yes.
Okay, what is it?
You would ask.
Today or yesterday?
Today, on the hoop.
He's a tough baby, Mr. Fangio.
Why did you put
How about this? What nation bombarded an undefended island after a 24-hour ultimatum? Mr. Adams.
Japan.
No. I don't think
Well, it's an awful good guess.
Well, it's the sort of thing she would do. Now, it was Italy who bombed the island of Corfu in 1923 after a general and some other people had been killed in Greece. The ultimatum had some impossible terms. Greece turned it down, and the undefended island was bombarded, and Italy at that time gave evidence of the sort of nation that she wanted to become. That was way back in 1923. What nation shelled a defenseless city in Spain, claiming an attack on one of its warships as an excuse? This was a very famous episode, very early in the present war, during one of its earlier phases. It was Germany who claimed that the loyalists in Spain had bombed the Deutschland, and as a reprisal, four warships fired on Almeria, wiping the whole town out. This was way back in May 1937. It's a good thing for us to remember that these atrocities began before what we call the opening of the present war, that the Spanish War was merely the first of the great battle for this war. Wouldn't you say that, St. John?
Yes.
However, gives us two wrong out of three, and sends a $50 war bond to Miss Redfield and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and passes us on to a question from Miss Anna L. LaForge of Morris County, New Jersey. Now, gentlemen, if you were suggesting the following people as guest experts for information, please, what quotations would you give to prove their qualifications? For example, or rather, here's the first one. Suppose you were suggesting the village schoolmaster in the deserted village as an information please guest. Mr. Kieran.
And still they gazed, and still the wonder grew that one small head could carry all he knew.
That's perfectly right.
Oliver Goldsmith.
Oliver Goldsmith, and that is a perfect quotation. That's just as true of Mr. Kieran as it is of the village schoolmaster. How about Sally in Our Alley? Suppose you were suggesting her as a guest of information please. Not a bad idea. Mr. Adams.
There's none so sweet as Sally.
That wouldn't be a good reason for having her on the program.
I think it would.
We've had those.
Mr. Taylor.
Well, it's curious. All I can...
Of all the girls that are so smart.
Now you're cooking with gas. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Of all the girls that are so smart, there's none like pretty Sally. 100% for you, Mr. Adams. Who wrote the poem? Henry Carey.
Somebody that didn't write much else.
Henry
yes,
Carey.
He wrote, I think he wrote Rule Britannia.
I'm not sure about that. If they did, he
I think he did.
He certainly wrote them out.
Old Britannica.
Or either that or God Save the King. One of the great songs of England he wrote.
A famous song. How about this one? Suppose we wanted to have Major General Stanley from the Pirates of Penzance on this program. How would you recommend him? In what quotation? Mr. Adams?
I would recommend him for almost omniscience.
And how would you prove it by a quotation?
He's the very pattern of a modern Major General.
Yes, that's right. And what sort of information did he have?
Animal, vegetable, and mineral.
Animal, vegetable, and mineral, yes. You know the kings of England? I quote, the fight's historical and so forth. That gives us 3 out of 3. Now, Mrs. Arthur Hayes Salzberger of White Plains, New York, sends this one in. What part of the anatomy is associated with each of these characters? And the first character is Elisha, E-L-I-S-H-A. Mr. Adams?
What character?
What part of the anatomy is associated with him, Mr. Kieran?
The bald head.
That's right. Who was Elisha?
Elisha was in the Old Testament.
Yes.
And the children mocked him.
Yes.
And he called a pretty bitter vengeance on him.
What did he do?
He had the bears come out after him.
Yes, that's right. Bears appeared from the woods and devoured the children. Very bloody tale. Yes, it's his bald head that caused all the trouble. Now, how about Benedict Arnold? What part of the anatomy do you think of when you think of Benedict Arnold? Mr. Kieran.
Benedict Arnold, what do you mean physically? He was shot. He was crippled.
What part of his
body? I'm trying to think whether it was a leg or an arm.
Well, pick one part. Pick one of them. Pick a limb.
His brain.
I think probably it was an arm.
Oh, well, it was a leg.
Well, I'm sorry. I was half right.
Yes, he was wounded in the leg during the Battle of Saratoga. At that time, he became a great national hero.
Right.
It wasn't until sometime later that he began making his mistakes. I think we ought to call you wrong or right.
No, call me wrong.
Call you wrong, all right.
You're wrong.
Lord George Hell. That was his name.
Hell?
Hell.
Please.
Well, that's what it says.
We're on the air.
That was his name. Lord George Hell, H-E-L-L. Mr. Taylor.
I should say the face.
Who was Lord George Hill?
He was the hero of a story by Max Verbal.
That's right. What was the story called?
Who was the incarnation of evil, more or less.
Yeah.
And to win the girl, he had a mask that expressed the great beauty and sweetness and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then, by an odd coincidence, he lived up to the mask.
That's right.
And finally, in a spirit of noble self-sacrifice, he resolved to take it off and show the girl that he'd been fooling her. He took it off, and lo and behold, he had the same face as the man.
That's very well told. That's exactly right, yes. That's the famous story of a happy hypocrite by Max Beerbohm.
And no dough for Mrs. S?
No dough for Mr. Salzberg. I'm awfully sorry. You've been worrying about Mr. Salzberg all this time while Mr. Taylor was telling us that nice story? How about this one from Mrs. Julia A. Ames of Berlin, New Hampshire? Can you identify the president whose birthplace is suggested by each of these songs that you're now going to hear? There's going to be 3 of them. We'll skip 2 out of 3. Let's have the first. Now, be careful. This is kind of a sticker. The president whose birthplace is suggested by that song, Mr. Kieran.
I say President Roosevelt.
Which one?
Theodore.
Ah, that's right, yes. Theodore Roosevelt, born in New York City. Where was Franklin D. Roosevelt born?
Well, I guess up the state, wasn't it?
I think he was, yes, up the river a bit. How about the next one? Mr. St. John.
Warren G. Harding.
Warren G. Harding, what was being played?
Beautiful Ohio.
Beautiful Ohio, that's what part of the country do you come from yourself?
Do I come from? Chicago. No kidding.
Good. Couple of buddies.
Well,
yes,
almost,
Harding.
Any president is born in Ohio.
Unless
right?
he's born in Virginia, Mr. Taylor.
Yes.
Be careful. Well, Taft was born in Ohio. Well, name another, Mr. Taylor.
William McKinley.
Rutherford B. Hayes.
Rutherford B. Hayes. I don't think he was born in Ohio.
James A. Garfield.
I don't think so. No, Grant was. Harrison was. Huh? McKinley, Harding. Now, how about the third and last, Mr.
Have to know what that is.
That's the trouble. It's kind of reminiscent, Mr. Adams, isn't it?
Hmm?
Isn't it kind of reminiscent?
Not a bit. Never heard of it.
Never heard of it before? That's nice cotton wool in his ears practically all his life. Mr. Taylor?
I've heard it thousands of times, and I haven't the remotest idea.
It's called the Jersey Bounce. Jersey Bounce. Now, what president?
Thomas Woodrow Wilson.
No, he wasn't born. He was born in Virginia.
That's right.
Mr. Carey?
No, I was going to go along on Wilson.
Well, the only one I know of that was born in New Jersey was born in Caldwell, New Jersey. Very nice, flourishing suburb. Grover Cleveland was born.
Oh, well, he grew up in Buffalo.
That's right. He did. That gives us 2 out of 3. And now Mr. Rysdale, with admirable modesty, points out that Luckies speak for themselves far, far better than he can speak for them.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, fine tobacco tells its own story of mildness and better taste. Frankly, we feel that if we can stimulate your interest sufficiently in Lucky Strike cigarettes to make you buy just one package, the cigarettes themselves will so stimulate your taste that you'll become a regular day-to-day smoker of Lucky. For in fact, every package of Lucky's contains 20 proofs, 20 round and firm and fully packed proofs that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And that Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. For at auction after auction, we consistently buy the riper, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. The real Lucky Strike leaf. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw. Mr. Fadiman, have I shown good common sense reasons for buying and trying that first package of Lucky?
Mr. Rysdale, like Lucky's, your facts speak for themselves, and I clocked you at 58 cents. And now a question from C.L. Layton of Chicago. What's the present name of the city once known as the following? Let's get 2 out of 3 on this. Once known as Christiania. What's its present name? Mr. Taylor.
Oslo.
Oslo. And what country is that?
Norway.
In Norway, yes. Principal city of Norway, isn't it? Wouldn't that be right, Mr. St. John?
I think so.
Now, the present name of the city once known as Tsaritsyn. Tsaritsyn. I may be mispronouncing it. It's T-S-A-R-I-T-S-I-N. Well, I'm sorry, gentlemen. This is the name of one of the most famous and one of the greatest cities in the world.
Petrograd.
Stalingrad.
Well, Stalingrad.
Yes, once known as Tsaritsyn. That gives us one wrong. Let's remember its present name, gentlemen, even if we can't remember its former. And now, what's the present name of the city or township once known as Stern Park Gardens? Mr. Adams.
Lidice.
And what is Lidice?
It was a village that was utterly destroyed by the Germans.
Yes.
And on, I think, June 10th.
That's right, June 10th.
And all the men were put to death.
Yes, and remember Hitler boasted that the village would be destroyed and forgotten, and one of the first things that happened was a little town in Illinois renamed itself immediately, Lidice. Another town in Mexico has done so, and I would bet that before this war is over, there will be 29 Lidices of the 29 United Nations arising to compute Mr. Hitler's boast that the little village's name will be forgotten. Here's a question from Mrs. M. Bernstein of Cincinnati, Ohio. Oh, it's an opera question. You'll love this, Mr. Taylor.
I bet I will.
Yeah. This is all about who kills whom in certain operas.
And said the sparrow.
Doesn't cover all eventualities. In what opera, gentlemen, does the tenor kill the soprano?
Oh, thousands.
Now, that's just wishful thinking, Mr. Adams. Mr. Taylor.
Well, for one, Verdi's Otello.
In Verdi's Otello,
mm-hmm.
Otello kills Desdemona.
Yep.
And he's a tenor.
He certainly is.
And Desdemona is a soprano.
Yeah, up to...
That's right. And Iago is a baritone. Yeah. You think Otello will have a very deep voice somehow. That's in the way it works.
This is opera.
isn't there an even more famous opera, I Pagliacci, in which the tenor kills... how does he do it?
He kills Neda.
Yeah, how does he do it? I like to think about these things.
Oh, well, he's stabbed.
He's stabbed, yeah. Sure. Well, you might as well enjoy it while you have a chance.
Oh,
and what opera does the tenor kill the baritone? Tenor kill the baritone.
Tenor kill the baritone.
It gets kind of tough, I guess. Tenor kill the baritone.
Is that the last act?
You mean you never got
I
that?
I wouldn't know that.
It is in the last act.
Tenor kills the baritone.
Well, it's in Lohengrin. Telramund is killed by Lohengrin. Remember that now?
Oh, steady, old man.
Right? What's wrong with me now?
No, I don't think so.
No?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't low. It doesn't low. Didn't kill Telemann?
No.
What did he do with him?
Well, he sailed away on a dock. But,
Now, I am no Wagner expert, as I think I can prove without much difficulty, and you may be right.
Well, you're frightening me into thinking that I'm not.
My information is that Telramund is killed by Lohengrin. Also, doesn't Faust kill Valentine in the opera?
Yes.
And isn't Faust a tenor? And isn't Valentine a baritone?
Yes, all the baritones begin by singing Valentine.
Begin to sing Valentine. Well, at least we got one of those wrong. Now, how about an opera in which the baritone, this part I like, in which the baritone kills the tenor? The baritone kills the tenor.
Doesn't he then commit suicide?
I don't think so, no.
I can give you one in which the soprano kills the baritone.
Well, that's sweet of you, Mr. Taylor.
Did someone on the stage?
Yes, I think so.
Yes.
Well,
no, Costa's no baritone.
No, but Scarpia, wasn't Scarpia baritone?
Yeah.
Does wasn't the tenor killed in that play?
Well, he had him shot.
Oh, it isn't the same thing as the real murder.
I claim a foul.
well, it's in Cavalleria Rusticana, isn't it? Alfio kills...
Well, that's only hearsay, because somebody just comes in and says
he's done so.
Alfio has killed Negro Turido, and you may or may not believe him.
In Tristan, isn't Tristan killed by somebody called Melot?
Yes.
I don't know if that's on stage or not.
$60 a week baritone.
Well, that's something. Well, we got two wrong on that. That sends a $50 war bond to Mrs. Bernstein, and that's that out of the tent. How about this one? From Foster Victor of Franklin, New Jersey. What time of day is it, and what's going on in each of these compositions? You're going to hear them played. You want to get two out of three. You want to find out what time of day it is and what's happening as the compositions are played. Does that come back to any of you? Is cotton wool still in your ears, Mr. Adams?
No, sir. I don't know the
air. Don't know the tune at all. Know the air, Mr. Taylor?
This is the time of night when I think of Oscar Levine.
Well, that's from Noel Coward's Mad Dogs and Englishmen Go Out in the Midday Sun. And, of course, midday is the time and walking is the activity. Let's see if you can get the next one, Mr. Cohn. I have two hands, Mr. Taylor and Mr. Cherry.
Yeah, you better give it to me.
I'm not so sure.
I've got to save my face.
All right. I don't see why you should want to, Mr. Taylor.
Well, I can't get a better offer. It's afternoon.
It's afternoon of what?
Mm-hmm. It's what somebody called afternoon on the farm, but it's... The afternoon of a fawn.
Afternoon. And what are the fawns doing in the composition, presumably?
Well, I'd rather you wouldn't ask.
At a bank, well, roughly speaking. That's the wrong way of putting it.
Well, he's fawning. He's
having
he's
fawn?
He's daydreaming.
Well, enjoying the afternoon in the company of the nymphs, I believe.
Yeah,
more or less. Do I have to put these words in your mouth, Mr. Taylor?
Well,
Mr. Cohn, let's have the third and last. That's something, seems to me, we all heard in school at a very early age.
Sounds like Mother McCree.
Well, something like it. It isn't exactly. Three fishers went sailing away to the west, as the sun went down.
By Charles Kingsley.
Isn't it by Charles
Kingsley?
Yes, right. By
music.
Charles Kingsley. So it's sundown, and it's the description of three fishers going sailing. Mm-hmm. And that loses us a $50 war bond going to Mr. Victor and a set of the Britannica also. How about this one from Irving Miller of New York? This is about various kings and princes and generals. First, what king, after surrendering to Germany, remained in his own country as a prisoner? Mr. Curran.
King of Belgium.
Yes. What was his name? What is
Albert.
His name? No.
Leopold.
Leopold the what?
King of the Belgians.
Leopold II.
I think it's the third.
Third.
I think it's the third. Leopold the Third of Belgium. What German prince is helping to fight the Nazis? The German prince helping to fight the Nazis. Now, Mr. Kern?
What do you mean, Prince Louis of Battenberg, of course, is no longer. He's of German
blood.
German royal blood.
Well, I meant one who is a German, as a matter of fact. It's the Prince Bernhard zu Lippe Biesterfeld, the husband of Princess Juliana of Holland, who is a firm anti-fascist.
What does she call him?
I have no idea. Bernie, I imagine. Bernie. Now, what general, after his country had surrendered, remained to organize a continued resistance? Mr. Kim?
Well, his country was conquered. General Mihailovich.
General Dragan Mihailovich of Yugoslavia, yes. One of the great heroes of this war.
Except that technically he wasn't a general when he stayed.
Is that so? Well, he's a general now.
He was just a mere colonel.
He was a colonel then, but he's going to stay a general from now on. And now, before we go on to the next question, here's Mr. Cross, who believes that the one sure way to stump Mr. Orson Welles next time he visits this program.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think a real tobacco quiz would stump nearly anyone, except an independent tobacco expert. For there are many, many questions about tobacco that can be answered only by the men who earn their living buying, selling, and handling the leaf. These auctioneers, buyers, and witchens all over the South know tobacco from A to Z, the kind of tobacco that gives you a better smoke. To the overwhelming preference of independent tobacco experts for Lucky Strike is well worth remembering. At market after market, year after year, these experts see the makers of Luckies buy the riper, the lighter, the naturally milder Lucky Strike leaf. And with these experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Luckies 2-1. Smokers, a friendly tip from the tobacco experts. Remember, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Thank you, Scott. That took 60 seconds. See if we can get started on this one from Helen Hobbs of Indianapolis. Each of the following is a member of a union or league of states or nations. Identify the whole group. Azerbaijan, Uzbek, Tajik. Mr. St. John.
They are Soviets within the Soviet Republic.
Holland, USSR, Belgium, Brazil. What larger group contains all those? Mr. Adams?
United Nations.
That's correct. United States, Costa Rica, Argentina. Mr. Kieran?
Well, that's the Union of North and South America.
I'll give us 3 out of 3, and that's all we have time for. Thank you, Mr. St. John, for joining in the fun tonight. In a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guest, and tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out 3 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica and 3 $50 war bonds.